It's Conscious Living. Hi there, I'm Wendy Garrett. Thanks for listening. Appreciate your time. Hope you're having a good day wherever you are. Good day, night, midday, afternoon, evening, coffee break. Whatever time it is, it's working. Yay! Hopefully. I have a guest who has been checking in on various timelines with people all over the world, people and non-people. One of these things, I love getting into this stuff because when you start talking to people who've had these other experiences and connecting on other realities, it gives you a chance to see that the other thing isn't, maybe our reality isn't quite as cement, set in stone, as we have been taught. One Voice Sacred Wisdom, author James Schwartz, revealing answers to some of life's greatest mysteries from your guides, spirits, and angels, guardians all across the board. Hi there, James. Do I call you Dr. Schwartz, Mr. Schwartz, James?
James is perfectly fine.
Okay. James on the line. And so NLP practitioner, hypnotherapist, what's your common title?
Probably the hypnotherapist, board certified hypnotherapist.
Okay. Now, when I was reading this and first found your information, I thought it sounded something like Dolores Cannon. Are you familiar with Dolores?
I am familiar with her, yes.
Okay. Some of the work that she did was similar, putting somebody into a hypnotic state and then getting information of anomalous type information that was from higher guides or other sources. Is that similar?
It is similar. Hers is a little different. At least the book that I read of hers was really focused on our connection or contact with aliens, whereas with mine, it's all different types of energies, whether that be a spirit guide or an angel or a ball of energy or, for some people, even Jesus. It's just whomever they bring in for their guides.
And you call it alchemical hypnosis?
Yes. And alchemical, it's one of the things that people need to understand is, first of all, there's no chemicals involved. But alchemy refers to transmutation or change. So there's that reference of turning lead into gold that a lot of people are familiar with. And alchemists in the days of old eventually became like the healers or the people that you would go to for herbs or potions. And then eventually that alchemy term was applied by Carl Jung in psychoanalytic methods, where what he was doing was working with archetypes and inner guides. And then in hypnosis, in kind of very loose terms, it's considered when we have someone bring a guide in to work with them during a hypnosis session.
Now, with this book, you've taken a lot of clients and included their transcripts, the actual session information from what was given at the time from either a higher guide or, like you're talking, a ball of light, whoever happened to show up. What surprised you most about this?
It was the consistency of the answers. And when I say that, I would have expected before I started out that the answers from, like, an animal guide would be different from a spirit guide and different from an angel and different from Jesus. And I would have expected that if the person in the chair was Catholic, their answers would be different from somebody who was Jewish or someone who was atheist or someone who was metaphysical. But what was remarkable about it is that most of the time the answers were, although worded, of course, very differently, but the answers were the same. And that was the thing that really struck me. And that's where I got the One Voice Sacred Wisdom title, because it was like we were speaking to one source of information, one voice, and then, of course, they were sharing wisdom. That's the sacred wisdom part of the title.
Well, okay. So, for instance, if I were focused on an animal guide, what would my animal guide, from your information, what would they be most likely to share with me?
Really, pretty much, it depends on, you know, what our focus is. They will, in this case, I would always preface the questions by saying, this is information that is going to help people grow and become enlightened and, you know, help the consciousness of our society. So they were pretty open. The guides were pretty open and answered just about anything. If I was working with you in a private session, and we said something, okay, like what's going to happen for Wendy over the next 5 years, they probably wouldn't answer something like that, because that's really kind of up to you. They don't want to guide you or tell you what to do in your life. But if it's general questions, if it was a question like, how could we help Wendy understand what happens when we die better, they would answer that question for you.
Okay, now that they experience death differently than we do. I mean, the when you're talking with guides, do they share any of their experience?
They didn't really get into their experiences. What was amazing about that particular question when I asked about death was that if you asked 10 people on the street what happens when we die, you would get somebody who would say, oh, you know, you rot in the ground. You get somebody else who says, oh, you go to heaven. You get somebody else who would say, oh, you become part of the oneness. And you get several people who say, I have no idea. But the interesting question when you asked the guides was that about probably maybe 96, 97, 98 of 100 would give you the exact same answer, which is really that the body will die or die off, but the spirit or the energy or the essence of that person continues on.
I like it. You touch across a broad base of content and topics. Karma. There was one. How does that work?
Well, it's interesting. That's the one question that really kind of gets everybody stirred up is the karma question, because their definition of karma is different from ours. Their karma, for them, it's about what we're here to learn. We think of karma as kind of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth kind of situation. That's not the way they see it. And so when I would ask about karma, they're basically like, no, that's not it. There's no karma. And one of the reasons why is because when we worked with these different guides, they would refer to energy and that consciousness or oneness, and that was their word or their descriptor for God or source or universe or creator. And they would always, always, always describe that energy as all loving, all forgiving. So what humans are saying with karma is we want to have this judgmental energy or this judgmental God that's going to make a decision and then enact punishment or retribution. And it doesn't work that way, you know. And even people who've had near-death experiences, they come back and they say, you know, gosh, it just felt so loving and so warm, and there was so much acceptance on the other side. And what we're saying is, by our definition of karma, is no, that has to be judgmental and punishing. But there are a few kind of caveats that might help people understand how this all works, though, and make them feel a little bit better about the karma thing. And one of them is that we do have the life review. And so that's when we make our transition, our entire life plays out before us. It's like watching a movie. And we evaluate our own situation. So we might look at those scenes and decide, oh, you know, gosh, I learned my lessons. I was really helpful. I helped a lot of people on this planet. Or we might look at that life review and go, that's kind of a creep. And the thing is, when you look at that afterwards, you decide, not energy or God or anything, you decide, what I need to do is I need to get these lessons, because we have this innate desire to evolve. And since I need to get these lessons, hit me harder next time in the next existence. Don't give me the tools that I have this time or whatever to go some other direction. Yeah, I want to really learn my lessons. And so people can choose a more difficult life for themselves.
I'm talking with the author, James Schwartz, One Voice, Sacred Wisdom, Revealing Answers to Some of Life's Greatest Mysteries from Your Guides, Spirits, and Angels. The reason I chose karma is because I actually had an up-close and personal encounter that dealt with karma. Well, more than one, but this one is a little bit more intense. I was attacked, or at least somebody broke into my apartment and tried to attack me. I managed to escape. On the balcony outside, the person was directly across from me and about 6 inches away from the edge of the balcony. It's a 3-story drop, cement at the bottom. And at that point, in order to get away, I had this incredible, fantastic power beyond. I threw the person off, ran, hurdled chairs out, stood on the porch waiting for that person to come out. And I'm just ready to go, okay, I can finish this. You know, get even, make sure that the person doesn't harm anybody else. And right beside me is this voice, very quick, deep. I knew I didn't dare do the opposite and said, "Karma." And at that point, I stopped and I looked at the person eye to eye and watched them go down the stairs and into the night. And then I puzzled over that, but I could have stopped this person from hurting somebody else. And they said the deal was between me and the other person and all debts are paid. So I thought that was the most, you know, from my perspective with my guide saying, no, there was no eye for an eye. There, no harm, no foul. No harm, no foul. It was a learning experience for both of us. And it was. So it was that thing of, wow, I would not have expected. Well, you know, angels are good, okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So my angel probably got a gold star for managing to deflect what was happening there. You know, I gave you this energy to get away, not to use it for personal or, you know, for any in with intent to harm. There were conditions. And so I thought, my gosh. But reading yours, and I liked the views that came through on karma, because I think that was the message I got up close and personal that same way, is no, there's no eye for an eye. There's what you do, and what you do is in your best interest or it isn't. And that wouldn't have helped me by hurting somebody else, no matter what had happened. Does that make sense?
Well, and I also think there's, and the guides have said this, there's dharma, you know, which is all the good that we do in our lives. And that kind of stacks up. And we do take that with us into each existence. And so you may have built up some really positive dharma in your lifetime. And that might have been a factor of part of this. And then even that face-to-face meeting may have been the karmic peace that had to happen between the two of you. But you had such good positive energy in you that one that that meant that that other person couldn't go any further. I don't know if that's hard. It's a little hard to explain because your energy was so positive and so strong and so powerful.
Well, I know that our conversation that we had, one of the questions I asked, don't you have anybody special? Isn't there anybody that you care about? And because I was thinking, you can't be a bad person. You know, that was my gut, is that what was happening, that this person at their very deepest in inner core was not a bad person and it wasn't about me. And so it was that thing of, I know we had a very intense conversation, but during the conversation, I built up the chi that gave me the power to then, you know, get away. But that thing was, I just thought, you know, why? This isn't necessary. And so I know that when I looked him in the eyes and he looked directly at me in the eyes, not that up and down dismissive, you know, or anger. It was that look of, who are you? And, you know, that was a way of saying, it's over.
Interesting.
So, okay, well, that's not hypnotherapy. But getting back into when people go in these other realms and they come back with this information, what is that result for them? What have you seen in your clients?
Well, most of the time what I'm doing is I'll have the client bring a guide in. There are times where I will have them experience a different realm or have them experience what's it like in a different dimension. And actually, it's kind of an interesting story. When the first time I ever did that, there's three different ways that guides would interact with us when we did these hypnotherapy sessions. And one is the people who would channel. And that was pretty interesting because when people channel, what's happening is they speak with a different inflection, they have different breathing patterns, there's different intonation. It's like a different person comes out of that person who's sitting there in the chair. And most of these people, they didn't know they channeled. They've never channeled before. But that happened with, you know, probably a quarter to a third of the people that I worked with. But then the second thing that could happen was the communications could work in a way where there was strictly a conversation between the client and the guide. Sometimes there was an intuitive piece to that too, but it was pretty much a conversation. Then the third way is that the guides would actually take a client to experience something so the client could see or feel it or experience it firsthand. For example, there was one woman where I was asking the guide, what's a way we can bring more love and light to the planet? And so her response is, oh, he took me to this circle of people and we're all holding hands and we're singing and we're praying and we're together working on our collective consciousness. So that's how he answers your question, is he took me to a scene where I could actually experience it. So I'm really pretty early on in this process. I'm asking about parallel planes, other realms, things like that. And can we be in these different places at the same time? And I was working with this client that I call Danielle in the book. And I could tell she just kind of lit up. Something happened. Something really changed inside of her. And she says, he took me to this different plane. She goes, it's very high, it's very light. She was actually whispering when she was telling me this. And I was like, okay, tell me more, what's going on here? And she goes, so it's very hard to talk, and the frequency is very high. The vibration is taking time for me to get used to. So he shows me that. That's the answer to your question. He took me to where he says I work at night. Although I'm here on Earth physically, I can be in different planes at the same time. And that for me was kind of a game changer, because it's like, okay, we opened the door here. So anytime I have a client or and a guide who are both willing, we're going to go explore some of these other realms. And most of the time when they describe it, they would use movies as an example, because there's nothing in our earthly life that was really similar enough that they could find a good comparison. But in the movies, they could say, well, like one woman talked about this, one of the Superman movies, and said there's all these ice crystals and stuff. It's like the Superman movie. And so that's the way they would describe these other existences or other planes.
Well, and see, that's what's so fascinating, because it's, you know, this is the theater of the mind. And so you, as a therapist, are getting up close and personal preview of other places and states of being. That it's just reading the book and reading the information, you know, it's nice to have this kind of corroboration for experiences I've myself have had. I've channeled, and those things are it's just amazing when you make these connections that, my gosh, there's so much more to living and to life and to creation than we can possibly put into words. And these visuals help take that to the next level, I think, in what your people are sharing in their sessions.
I think we're just sort of scraping the surface of what really is out there. You know, they say that we only use a small percentage of our brains, and I think if we really worked on our consciousness and our connection, a lot of these experiences that happen in the book and a lot of the information, I think, is open to most people out there.
Well, when you're talking about this, there's a part in the book, How to Find Connection, Love, and Inner Peace. Mm-hmm. And there's an angel who comes through here, and you're trying to figure out, you know, what's up? What could we change about our present? And technology seems to be a big bugaboo.
It really is. And it's funny, because I didn't bring up technology. They did. There was a lot of times I'd get to the end of the session and I'd say, all right, what else do we want? What else do you want us to know? What else can you help us with? And that was the thing they kept bringing up, was technology. And when you think about it, the guides, angels, spirits, whatever's out there, they want us to connect with them. And we have to really take a moment and be present to do that. And we can't connect when we're thinking about things from the past. And we can't connect when we're worried about the future. We also can't connect when we're on our electronic devices. And when you think about it, on a typical day, we might spend 8 or 10 or 12, 14 hours on devices, whether it's computers or phones or tablets or TVs, and 0 minutes connecting with these divine energies, you know, with our guides and our angels and spirits. And so how can we evolve when we're not even opening ourselves up for that possibility? So that was kind of what they had to say about this. We're here. Where are you guys?
I like that, because I thought, you know, that's just a little bit more, incentive to trust that some of this stuff isn't as difficult to manage and difficult to connect with as it might seem. I hear a lot more from people who are experiencing things they thought would never be possible in their lifetimes. You know, time shifts, seeing ghosts, or hearing things from other people, like a telepathic connect. And it's like, I'm not psychic. This doesn't happen to me. And they're saying, but it is. And what do I do? And where do I go? And the guidance here is just, you know, well, in a good way, go to the light. In a good way.
Right. Or just meditate, you know, some people are, they don't understand the meditation thing, but it's just try and connect. You know, I talk about in the book, just find a quiet place that can sort of be your sanctuary or your church or something. Close your eyes and try and connect. Maybe ask a few questions. Maybe just give yourself time to hear and to listen to what's out there. Because I think people would be amazed at how many signals that we are getting. It's just that we're not paying attention.
Well, that's what was it? Forest bathing, forest therapy. Is that what it's called? Anyway, it's where you go connect with nature. You go take a walk in the woods. You go outside and ground yourself. Put your little bare feet in the ground, or you garden, and that is just a very simple way. It doesn't have anything to do with meditation, which some people think is too complicated. Meditation is just shutting. It's saying, "Be quiet, mind. Be quiet."
Right.
It's like, forget about the bills. Forget about the person who cut you off in traffic. Forget about the person at the office who's very competitive and, you know, you want to get things done in your own time and they insist there has to be a deadline that's always way, way, way too short.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of things, they're part of life, but they're also in a way with the spirit element counterproductive because it keeps basically setting more distance between you and that inner light, that inner source. And I think your people, when you're talking with them, you're giving them permission to pay attention to that inner source, whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's the key thing, is it's like the inner source. You know, you mentioned the forest, and what the guides say is that your connection, that might be, you know, at a waterfall or in the park or, you know, at a little area of your house that you've set up that's your place to meditate or something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a church or follow, you know, religious rules and all that kind of thing. This is about your personal connection. And it can be in a church. That's fine if you find it there. But they're just saying, just connect with us, whatever way feels comfortable or right for you.
Who was the most, and we're going to have to take a break here real quick, but who was of the people that you spoke with, and the ones that you included in the book, who was the most, I guess, the biggest surprise, the most unconventional in terms of a guide that came through?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. That's a tough question because, I mean, I've had a little bit of I say in there, I mean, if there's been like aliens, there's been fairies, there's all kinds of things. They don't happen quite as often. Probably there were some kind of almost like mythological figures, like people would say, if someone like Athena or something would come and speak through someone, and sometimes those were actually some of the most informative.
Wow, I just did an interview with a woman about Norse goddesses, and so that for the Celtic, you know, for certain parts of the world, they're more real than our Batman, you know, Robin, whatever, than our comic book heroes. These are the mythologies that have been come down through centuries. And so Athena, the gods and goddesses, that would play right into that. I think, hang on just a second. We're going to take a break, but I wanted to go through, there are, you know, several potentials here of what kind of guide you would have. And you said fairies. So I wanted to go back with that because there seems to be a fairy theme along with a nature spirit and the little people. And I'm hearing more people bring those topics up. It also has a place in Native American culture. So if you don't mind, that fairy one, just focus on that one. And in the meantime, though, if you're listening and you want more information and possibly your own session, the voice, One Voice, Sacred Wisdom, Revealing Answers to Some of Life's Greatest Mysteries from Your Guides, Spirits, and Angels. James Schwartz is my guest. We're talking about this. And if you wanted to make, you know, like an appointment and you're interested in pursuing this a little further, you can actually go on his website and check out RM Hypnotherapy. I was going to say my hypnotherapy, rmhypnotherapy.com, the Rocky Mountain Hypnotherapy Center. And now you book on a regular basis. Do you still book people for these kinds of sessions?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have people who are really interested now, especially because of the book. They come in and it's like, I want to talk to my guides. And some of them, we can also get personal information sometimes. And so they're wanting to do that. So it's pretty common. I like grief work is a common thing when they've had someone they were really close to who maybe passed on and they're feeling like, can I communicate with that person and do some work so that helps me move forward so I won't be stuck anymore, that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. So we're going to come back, and I wanted to get back into fairies. We can get in with that, connecting with someone who's deceased as well. So Stick around. Again, my guest, James Schwartz, Conscious Living and Power Radio.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a Labish Terrier Hound Chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Okay, what are you wearing right now?
Nothing.
That's right. So mommy's going to teach you how to dress yourself. Underwear always comes first, name tag at the back, then pants, then shirt. Get the first button in the right hole or you have to start all over. Socks go on first, then shoes, right on right, left on left. With shoelaces, just take the ends, cross them over, switch the loops, the rabbit goes down the hole, pull tight, and you're left with bunny ears. Got it? Why are your pants on your head?
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. 2 minutes twice a day, making sure they brush their teeth, is easier, and it could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. Visit 2min2x.org to find out more. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
So you see, son, good manners are important. Should I go through it again?
Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Exactly. Always say please, thank you, you're welcome, and excuse me. Sit up straight, hold doors open, don't speak with your mouth full, keep your elbows off the table. Share your things, play nice, and generally treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Got it?
Got it.
And stop picking your nose.
Most parenting is hard to do in just 2 minutes. 2 minutes twice a day, making sure they brush their teeth, is easier, and it could help save them from a lifetime of tooth pain. Visit 2min2x.org to find out more. A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ag Council.
Conscious Living and Power Radio. One voice, sacred wisdom. James Schwartz is my guest. And we were talking before the break about the different kinds of connections you would have with your guides, spirit guides, guardian angels, whomever happened to show up. And I like the pet connections, but the fairy connections, I think, are also fascinating. Can you talk about one that and the advice that the fairy would have had?
The fairies, well, it seems like what happens is people bring in whatever they resonate with the most. So if you have somebody who is like really connected to the earth, for example, they would bring in maybe a wolf or a bear or something that it kind of makes sense. Then you have people who might be more connected to the planet. They would maybe bring in a spirit guide because they would be, you know, they connect with people, and the spirit guide would have the form that's kind of human. But then they would look like they're from another time, another place. So, for example, it might be a Native American from 300 years ago or something that comes in and talks to them. But things like fairies, they come in a lot of times with people who are maybe more creative, more in tune with things like you know, mythology and fantasy and things like that. So I think it seems like the voice is pretty similar in that, you know, like I said earlier, we talked to this one energy, but the form for each person can differ. And it kind of, a lot of times, seems to be what they'll resonate with, what feels safe and comfortable for them.
Well, that makes sense. Like if you're talking with a ball of light, some person, they may not, that's like too foreign to say, I'm talking to the ball of light.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that you get into with some of this information is the time and how that concept plays out throughout the universe, different dimensions, different spheres, different, you know, is there parallel time, linear time? It's all different. And it is all a potential experience. I think Shirley is the one who brings this through. Shelley. Yeah, Shelley. Okay. I like the way she talks about time. And there's a couple of things where she kind of jumps time from circular to linear and things all happening at the very same time. You remember that one?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you explain that?
Things all happen at the same
time. You know.
and people have to understand who are listening that I'm trying to just take these concepts and, you know, make them as simple or concrete as possible. There's two aspects to time. It was kind of funny when I would talk to the guides about time. They would say this is really hard for humans to understand, for the human mind to get. And so they would try and explain it, and then I'd come back like in my next session and say, okay, I think I got it. It's like this. And I would come up with some analogy, you know, it's like throwing a pebble in a pond and you've got these concentric circles. And they'd come back and kind of say, well, not exactly, you know, but then finally I had a couple people who really, the guides really explained it well. And the first thing to understand is one guide said that there's all these different existences that we have, and they're kind of like aquariums. You can kind of think of them in that sense. And with each aquarium, there's a different set of rules. And so in one aquarium, we might just be like existing as love and light, as just sort of an energy kind of thing. And in another aquarium, there would be consciousness, no physical embodiment or whatever. And then there's the Earth Aquarium, where we do have the concept of time. And I think that's one of the rules in the Earth Aquarium, because we're here to learn and evolve. So time has to occur within this one little paradigm, because we have to see the consequences of our actions. And in the book, I kind of put it this way. I say, like, the young boys making fun of the old man with the cane need to become that old man with the cane so that they can learn from their actions. But then there's, and hopefully this is understandable as I talk about these things, but there's another thing that occurs with time, and I thought this was such an excellent explanation. And it is in the book, and it's something that people would understand when they read One Voice, Sacred Wisdom, is that there's this, it's almost like each of us is a power station. And when I say a power station, it's like our energy or our essence, whatever you want to call it, is like a power station. And we've got all these arms, energetic arms that reach out. And at the end of each one of those energetic arms, we've got a ball of energy. And that ball of energy is one of our incarnations. And each of us might have 100 different arms with different balls of energy going into different existences. And some of those existences might be on Earth, and some of them might be present time, some of them might be past time, some of them might be future time. Some of them also might be to other realms, going to other existences and other dimensions, other planets, that kind of thing. So it's kind of complex, and I think I explain it better in the book, but with the way that time occurs, that's why we're so multidimensional, that we can be in all these different places at the same time.
Okay, so for the person who has gotten the book and they have listened to this podcast two or three times, and they're now ready to go back and understand better the linear concept, at the very same time they're reading the book, which means all these different things have happened, and now this is the perfect conjuncture of this particular timeline, it's on page 205.
Okay, good.
Well, when you get it,
it's hard to condense it to like 2 or 3 minutes, you know, to try and explain it, because it's kind of an advanced concept.
It really is, and it's wonderful because it also brings the radio broadcast into it. You know, you're broadcasting on a certain frequency. The way that this happens, there's sometimes with radio stations, there's bleed through, and you're hearing somebody else's station on the channel you want to listen to, and then sometimes they'll go in and out, and they'll change. You'll get one overpowering the other, and then that radio broadcast, if it's a replay, it may be from a different time, and then all of a sudden you start overlaying these potentials of what might be happening in real time, radio time, frequency, over broadcast time. It's like, oh, wow, this gets complicated and a whole lot more fun. When you were working with this, and you're hearing from people, especially like, this is what I do in the dream time. This is at nighttime. I'm learning somewhere else, or I'm teaching somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Did you get any people that you thought were really much more advanced in their nighttime work than their daytime endeavors? That would, you know, they might have been surprised themselves by that.
I think it's pretty common. What I found was actually, it sounds like a lot of us are working at nighttime. It could potentially be that I talk about a recurring dream that I have, and it's not really a recurring dream, it's a recurring location where I go back to this, my childhood home where I grew up, and my entire life I go back to that house probably in a dream at least once a week, if not more. And I think of it that either what I suggested in the book is this like a portal for me to get to these other existences so I can go experience them at night? Or is it potentially maybe where I go and meet different guides or angels or whatever and get some sort of guidance or, you know, some sort of information that I need to move forward? And they were kind of saying yes and yes. That's what's happening. And it sounds like it's not just me. I got a sense from a lot of people that this is, you know, like with that Danielle excerpt I was talking about earlier, she says, this is where I go at night. This is where I go to work. So yeah. I think it's more common than we think.
Well, and there's a person, his name's Jim Self, and he's been on this for a long time talking about, don't you remember? We did this overnight before we spoke. Don't you remember? Weren't you in class? Weren't you paying attention? It's like, well, I kind of remember, but I remember when I go back to sleep. And then I wake up and I forget. I think that's the important part.
Yeah.
The waking up and forgetting are when you actually do the work and you go back and you remember it and say, oh, wow, how did I forget? It was so obvious when I was asleep. Now I'm awake and I'm completely clueless. That's not fair.
And sometimes you almost have to write some of these dreams down if you really want to get the meaning of them and start figuring them out. You have to keep something on the bedstand or the nightstand where you've got like a pencil and paper or a pad of paper and a pencil or a pen where you can just write some of the information down that comes from those dreams, and then you might be able to get a little bit more insight as you do that.
Journaling is so fantastic. I've been doing that since I was a kid, and some of it is when I have had precognitive dreams or things that gave me visions of what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it would be a metaphor, and other times it would be a puzzle, and sometimes it would be right on, but it always was something that I had to be conscious of not reading too much into it, because there was a way that it would give it to me so I wouldn't be frightened. I would just be aware. Mm-hmm. And with that, sometimes it's, you know, a year and a half down the road. It'll, you know, 6 months, a year and a half down the road, then these things will, like a job change, mm-hmm. or a new person coming into my life, or a different, you know, a work scenario or a challenge, or a large scale catastrophe. Those kinds of things have all been on the horizon and in the dream plane. But if I didn't write it down, I would lose it.
I spent about about a year maybe, doing a dream journal where I was writing down everything, even if I woke up in the middle of the night. And what was interesting is that I was getting up to like, you know, maybe 18 dreams a night or something. I mean, there were so many things I was writing down. But I kind of had some experiences like you where I had quite a few where the dreams would come true and they would happen. They would play out to the point where I would hit that moment in my life and go, oh my gosh, I already know what's going to happen here. and it wasn't things like, you know, car accidents where somebody's going to, you know, get seriously injured or anything. It was just little day-to-day things. But it's like, oh, I already know what that person across from me is going to say next. That kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And some of it's helpful. At one point, I had to quit writing because I was too intense. And my guides actually said, back off, because there's a part of it where when you get into this, you are actually not just recording, you are projecting. Mm-hmm. And so it depends on what's going on in your life and how aware you are as a creator that you are manifesting. And there's a point where on the dream plane, you can dream it and make it real, take it in the daytime, work a couple steps of bringing that into play. On the nighttime plane, again, go back in and do some more conscious during the nighttime creation and bringing it into the daytime dream. And there were some things that were happening in my life that were a lot more traumatic. And I decided, you know, I don't want to bring this about. I want to shift gears. And I had to give the dream a break so that I could do the work without setting it in stone. And I hope that makes sense. But it's part of our create ability that we're able to do these things, and we're so much more powerful than we realize.
Yep, I agree.
You want to train people in doing your methods too, because you at the end of the book you say, hey, if you're interested in doing this, come see me.
Yeah, right.
How long does it take to learn the techniques?
Well, I haven't started teaching this yet. I'm thinking about it. There's so much involved, and I can just talk about one piece of it to give you an example. And
sure, yeah.
I think people will kind of understand this, but to do this work, you have to create an environment that's very protected, very safe. And so there's my guides or angels or spirits or whatever that are working in the center with me, and they've got the space. It's like a very sacred space, very protected space. And that, even just getting people to that point where they can do that and put that energy around that's so protective for both myself and the client, that's a big piece. And there's some learning that goes on with that. That's just one small piece of it. So I probably will teach it, because you know, you may have seen on my website, I've got another book that's about a holistic approach to infertility. It's called The Mind-Body Fertility Connection. And I have taught that. I've got several practitioners who do that work around the country. In fact, some international ones. So I have taught before, and I probably will do this in the future, but I have to figure out how to put it all together, because there's a lot involved in this one.
I do want to follow up real quick on that other plane, because yes, it takes a sacred space. It takes having that element around you that kind of puts up a barrier. You know, you're broadcasting on certain levels and you don't want it to be wide open. You have to have some kind of, and the best word for me is a barrier to keep the interference from drawing other people's thoughts, even in your own clinic, your own area. People are so much more, they're like little sponges, and you bring everybody else's work and say, okay, I'm ready. It's like, wait, let's filter through and see what you're actually working on, because you brought your mother, your father, your brother, and two neighbors down the street.
Yes. And there can be negative energies out there. I'm not talking about things like the devil or any of that kind of stuff.
No.
Because I talk about that in the book, and that's kind of a man-made concept. But there can be, people can bring negative energy. But the thing is, with this space that I've created at my center, that doesn't stand a chance. There's so much positive and so much healing energy and everything that it has no power. But I would worry about training people who weren't able to create that space, because the negative energy could come in and it could, you know, have a pretty strong impact on the people there involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It's psychic self-protection. And I've done a couple of shows recently where there are more people doing this kind of work and not necessarily with, you know, in a protected environment, just because they're curious and they're wanting some kind of a result. And at the same time, not understanding, there's a really powerful element that comes into setting your space and asking for your own light to be for the highest good, whatever you're bringing through, divine purpose for the highest good to help clear that space and bring through a lighter element of this creation that we're all around. And there's no way to make it fit one size fits all for everyone because each person works it a different way. But the best thing is to say there is an element of protection with this work that is necessary so you don't get taken off track. It has nothing to do with those, you know, big, dark, deep, oh my, you know, somebody's going to get you. It has to do with discordant energy, with energy that is kind of chaotic. And if you're chaotic in your own space, then you bring that element in and you can get distracted. Does that make sense?
Yep, I totally agree. And it's sort of, I tell people there's a difference between like a practitioner and a healer, and the healer can create that sacred space that's, you know, going to really benefit the clients that come in to see that person, whereas the practitioner might go through the motions and maybe they have the adequate training and know how to do things, but there's a difference on an energetic level with those two.
The healer has the big guns, okay?
Yes.
They're like, okay, I've paid my dues, and that isn't something that you demand. It's something that is given as you do the work. As you do the work, then that element says, okay, I will participate. But you do not make a demand. It's as you have proven that you are willing to follow different sorts of protocols, whatever they happen to be, and create that template for a protected space, then you get help from the other side, corner, above, below, all of that, to come in and say, all right, we're all working and we're all in this together. It's that incredible oneness that then elevates and brings a whole new element to your own personal equation. It's just the energy work is you feel it. You feel it when the room has that divine spark, I guess, or that electrical charge that comes into it that says, bring it, we're here, let's go. So you have been doing this how long?
I started this in 2003, started doing hypnotherapy full time.
Okay. And in that time, have you seen more people become interested in doing this kind of personal work?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes, it's really grown. The type of work I've done is really, it's changed and evolved. And, you know, I think part of it just because maybe the nature of the work, but it attracts a lot of people who are healers. And maybe not with hypnotherapy, but maybe they're acupuncturists or maybe they do herbal medicine or want to do energy work or whatever. And so a lot of those people, I think they seek out and look for a space like we've talked about. And so I would say there is this element of people that are here that are going, okay, let's work on our stuff. Let's really evolve the consciousness of each of us as individuals, and hopefully that's going to grow the consciousness of the society, the bigger picture.
Everybody always talks about the big question, what happens when we die? Was there a consensus from all your peeps?
There really was, and and that's what was so amazing. Like I said earlier, if you asked 10 people on the street, they would not agree, and they would all, a bunch would say, I have no idea. And I would even ask people before we start our session, and they'd say, I have no idea. But the guides never say they have no idea. They always know what's going to happen. And it is, you know, that our essence or that our energy or our spirit, whatever word you want to call it, is immortal. That doesn't go anywhere. So it's just the physical body that dies off. And then really we begin all these other existences that are well, actually, we're already in all these other existences. But so we're basically multidimensional and energy that's immortal. And so when people talk about, they say things like, oh, you know, the last rites, or he's going to his final resting place or those kinds of things. It's a terrible thing to say because really we're not.
So can two souls inhabit one body or can they inhabit several bodies? How does that work?
What I think is, that's kind of an interesting question because I'm not sure that two would inhabit a body simultaneously, and I can't say that definitively. I don't know that.
Yeah.
But we do have what I call parallel planes, which is something that came out of this work where your energy or your higher self or spirit, whatever you want to call it, is not only here talking to me right now, but maybe a part of you is a teacher in England or something, and maybe another part of you is a farmer in India or something. And so your spirit can be in a lot of these other places besides just this one existence on this planet. And that's what I'm calling parallel life regressions. And when that came up in the book, I thought, okay, well, I got to test it out. And sure enough, it's like every person I tried it with, it's like, okay, there's all these parallel existences going on at the same time. And I think it can even be, we could be connected to some people who are in our life. And I talk about this in the book a little bit, how it could be like that husband and wife that's been married for 50 years and they're still madly in love with each other, or two best friends, or, you know, maybe a grandparent and granddaughter or something where they can have this amazing connection. And that may be that those energetic arms that I talked about earlier coming from the same higher self are in those two people, and that's why they have such a strong connection.
And part of that, I think, I like that because it's that oneness, that thing of, you know, multidimensional being and being able to pull from that information a greater empathy and compassion for other people who have a part of us in them. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you don't always have to make it, you know, all about me, but hey, when you look at it from that vantage point, all of a sudden it is. And so, you know, there's a cat on the street and you're going, oh, there's a part of my essence that's a part of that reality too. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a way of exploring more, I guess, intentionally other ways of being in this particular body, lifetime, awareness, consciousness. And that's what I think you're adding to the equation, different ways of being and seeing and connecting. And it just takes a little bit more, I guess, time and backing away from tech, as I'm saying, as we're using this technology to communicate.
Right.
to make space to do this. Okay. So anyway, I appreciate your time. We're going to have to get out of here. It's One Voice, Sacred Wisdom, James Schwartz. And if you want a session, connect you with you at the on the website.
They can, you're right, they can go to Rocky Mountain Hypnotherapy or RM Hypnotherapy is a good way to reach me. Also, if they want a little more information about the book, there's a website devoted specifically to that, and that's www.onevoicesacredwisdom.com. So.
Okay, and let me put in an element for that psychic self-defense, because it really that is a very, very interesting aspect to this. When you deal with people who have mediumistic abilities or tendencies or experiences, then there are all sorts of open doors and windows that come along with that. And once you start beginning to feel either intimidated or frightened, then the best thing to do is back away, shut down, relax, and in this case, call James, because you're listening to James, okay?
Yes.
And James can say, it's okay, be calm. We'll deal with this. But that is, it's another very important element in doing this work, is realizing you are a spiritual being. You have that energy essence that also is open all across the board to other things you may not see, but you can sense, and you need to know that they sense you. James, I appreciate your time. Is there anything else you want to add? I've got a minute.
I want to just expand on that spiritual being piece, because that's really important. That's something the guide said over and over. We are spiritual beings, not these physical beings. That's the problem that's getting in the way, is we want to be humans and we want to act like humans, whereas we're really our spiritual beings, and that's the connection we need to make, is with our spiritual, the divine, the essence, the energy that's out there.
And as you do that, you'll feel more connected. That telepathic, what you come forward with, that you are telepathic. You may not know it, but you do have that psi element as a as part of your hard drive. Okay, so just remember that. And if you have questions, the website rmhypnotherapy.com for James Schwartz, and you can get the book anywhere. One Voice, Sacred Wisdom, James Schwartz, revealing answers to some of life's greatest mysteries from your guides, spirits, and angels. And in some cases, that beautiful glowing ball of light. Okay. All right. So thank you for listening. And thank you, James, for your help and your awareness and your insight and all the wonderful things you're doing, giving people new views that they can work with. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Conscious Living and Power Radio. Till next time, stay curious. There's a whole wonderful world out there.